we've developed with colleagues in Treasury as well to kind of produce a very largely consensual product.
Obviously, the critical component of the two-part pension reforms, including the revenue enhancement bill, which has already been passed by both houses. And these are really the product of quite extensive engagement between ourselves, Treasury, Parliament, both houses, the industry as well, over some of the most significant package of reforms. And we think it's going to give relief to millions of workers who are really struggling. We think it's also going to help plug and fix some existing what we think are legal challenges, but also quite uniquely also to help boost savings too. So that's quite a unique combination of positive aspects to it. We welcome the bill and the proposals, and we really look forward to the implementation on the 1st of September of this year. And needless to say, Chair, millions of workers are literally anxiously awaiting this relief as well. Chair, I think we also wanted to just say that we welcome the amendments made by the National Assembly by SCOF to ensure that the bill meets its intended objectives and beneficiaries, and also specifically to ensure that all pension funds and provident funds are included in these reforms. And our kind of most critical selling point for the NZOP is simply for this bill to be passed before rising for elections, ideally the sooner the better when possible. Chair, we said obvious that if we didn't manage to achieve this, then it means the entire September implementation date would be a serious jeopardy, and of course this would be a catastrophe, and see many workers struggling. Chair, our support for this, for the two bills and the two-part pension reform, obviously the PSA bill, has been widely discussed. We've done a lot of work since 2020, and whilst we're disappointed we hadn't got implementation done earlier, we are pleased with the significant progress we've made and the significant consensus we managed to collectively achieve. In essence, Chair, often when workers look at these bills, Chair might remember William Hoffman and other colleagues members had a simple English campaign, I think, well, the first parliament, I think around 94, 95. Keep it simple. I think we've long lost that ethos, but nonetheless, our support for the bill, Chair, that one is it's going to allow workers access to the state without having to keep the final cash off the hedge funds. Number two is that immediate relief would be available when the law comes into effect on 1 September. We have a reasonable, fair compromise implementation date of 1 September. We would have loved it to have been last year or March this year, but nonetheless, it's far better than delaying to next year. We also welcome that in the bill specifically, with the SCOF amendments, that all workers, including members of the government, employee pension funds, the ESCOM, ESCOM's already there, sorry. And the Transnet and the Post Telecommunication Pension Funds will also be included. The system of reforms will be binding upon all pension funds, and all workers will be entitled to access immediate relief and the savings pot going forward. We do have agreement for further movements to be drafted in the near future, that workers who are retrenched would also be able to access the full savings too. So we do believe that the reforms are quite helpful, that it's going to prevent workers needing to resign to access a limited portion of the pension funds. Because right now, if you look at the stats, it's quite scary that only about 60% of Africans can afford to retire when they hit retirement. That's a crisis. One of the major shifts of this whole package of reform is that we're going to be preserving two-thirds of future savings while at the same time giving meaningful relief to workers immediately going forward. We know many workers would have loved to see much larger amount of relief on the surface, and we've had that long discussion. We also would also love that, but we accept the compromise and we're keen to implement. And in essence, Chair, that yes, the immediate relief and the future rate wouldn't be enough to settle a home loan or a car, etc. But it's going to be largely the equivalent of a placing check on both the immediate relief and the savings pot. And that over time is going to make significant difference. Certain checks can help plug financial potholes, pay off credit card, short-term, motion visa debt, etc., medical bills, and so forth. And that also can help give some relief to workers. At the same time, workers can remain employed. They don't need to become unemployed, and they can access relief. We think also, Chair, from 1st of September, there will be a significant stimulus injected into the economy as workers will tap into the savings pot for immediate relief of 10% up to 30,000 rand. does also benefit because you will pay taxes on those expenditures, etc. So it's a very positive cyclical injection to the economy from workers to the jobs, the economy move. Chair, with regards to the National Assembly of Venice, who is fully supportive, we're pleased that the Venice have been made there. and in essence, the critical is first that the GPS, the transit, the post telecommunication pension funds are included in these. These, because of accidents of history, are governed by separate acts, so it would be necessary to just stipulate this. And obviously, if it hadn't been done so, it would have seen many workers being excluded, so that would have been a disaster for us. Chair, just getting towards the end, we support the September 2024 implementation date. We think this sacrosanct to the state is here to at all costs. We simply can't afford for any delays for workers. And we also do feel that engaging in scaremongering, although if we didn't achieve that date, so we think it's very, we can do it, we can easily achieve that date with a bit of hard work. But if we didn't achieve it, we would see many workers just simply choosing to resign out of frustration because they have been waiting for this date for some time. And that just brings us back into the cul-de-sac of resignations, of cash out to tight pension funds, etc., which I think all of us, government, business, labour, parliament, we all want to avoid where we can. So just thought about the implementation date, I think it's straightforward when we should adhere to it. We think Parliament has made excellent progress, that the revenue laws bill is done by Parliament. We're confident that the PFA bill can be passed. We would love it to be passed by April, but it's not possible to the end to be Canada by the beginning of May. We will engage as consultant with the presidency to help him expedite his review, and we hope and trust his assent to it during the course of May. And we want to get that done as quickly as possible, Chair members, because then obviously Treasury does need to do its work, and the Fund and the Pension Funds need to also do their work. We want to give them as much space and time to do so. Treasury will obviously need to promulgate the Act itself to enable the pension funds to move forward, and so we want to get all of that basically done by May. So we maximise the amount of space for the pension funds to do it, and obviously they would need to amend their rules in coordination with the Financial Sector Conduct Authority, so they're ready for 1 September. And we're also having very positive engagement with our colleagues in the pension funds and the different bargaining councils, etc. And also with colleagues in the FSPA and Treasury as well, to make sure we have a coordinated approach. We work together as a single collective with a single message on it. So the Chair, also administrative issues that you have a large amount of workers who are on the 1st of September will be covering the GPS, etc. So it also means those pension funds need to put in place and it's administrative support. And it might be as mundane as issues of cost and staff, consumer education, etc. The last thing we want to have is a system which is overloading and collapsing, etc. So we want to have a smooth learning. But these are the kind of things we'll be engaging with the colleagues. And I think we're having meetings this afternoon with business too, and they'd like to kind of look at these, how to work it together as a single project collectively. Sure, I think also once the public procurement work, we would need to have those remaining issues engaged with colleagues in Treasury and industry. Ideally, through you know, the team labs, but just outstanding matters. So one of the issues is the issue that workers who have lost their jobs, that they've been retrenched, there's no fault of their own. To ensure that they are able to, in a secondary member, to be covered. We think it might also be useful, Chair, to have a discussion around education loans. You know, could workers, like they do with pension funds, also take out education loans from the pension funds, because that's not a reckless debt, that's a positive investment in your child, and in your family, and in the economy, etc. But you do have many workers in the working middle, so to speak, who are not able to access this fast, but also can't afford tertiary education for the children. But I think to the point that you know, these issues should be discussed quite quickly, especially the issue of retrenchment. We hope that we can discuss with colleagues in Treasury and industry over the course of May, June, July, so we can get done by August. So when the TLABs come to the civil parliament, they could be included. And essentially, this is catering for the issue of retrenchment, so that basically parliament can get done through this part of the journey by November, as long as there's a TLAB. These could come into effect in March next year. And so this is a critical chair because workers would be retrenched naturally all the time, and when that happens, they do need to have access to their savings, etc. So I think, Chair, in conclusion, we're very pleased with the thrust of the support reform and the PSA bill. Religion wants to welcome the construction engagement with the head of treasury and the members of parliament of both houses across the party line. Obviously, they aim to win out the most, but across party line. And then we've really managed to achieve consensus. This is not often the case, and when we do achieve it, you know, we should appreciate those positive moments. And of course, Shani, needless to say that we need to move with speed to ensure implementation date online to this year. This is a huge victory for workers, for the workplaces too, and we think ultimately for pension funds as well, and of course the fiscal and economy as they begin to move to a more progressive, more inclusive system where workers have better choices, which will benefit everybody. And I think lastly, Chair, we don't really need to mention members, but obviously we don't have time for delays. Our workers are fairly anxiously waiting for this, and we really don't have the luxury to disappoint them. But we're not worried about the Chair, to be honest. We're very confident we've come so far with 95% done in this race. And yes, there's significant work to be done at Parliament, and the Presidency, at Treasury, and SARS, and especially on the pension funds. But we're confident we are well on track, and we can just need to push the final leg of this race. So, yeah, so we're done with our presentation, Chair, and hopefully we didn't abuse your hospitality and speak too much. Thanks very much, Chair.
No, it was quite a motivational speech at the end. I'm not sure whether it was necessary at all, but who are we to say what you would say? Okay, so we over to the teacher. You're almost bordering on a preacher at the end, Pastor Matthew. Right, that's okay. Hi. Ah, here we are. I see, yes.
Good morning, Honourable Members.
We know you from Parliament.
I'll share my screen. Thank you for the opportunity again. Just a quick recap on who the CISA is. We represent our members, which are retirement fund administrators, investment managers, long-term insurers, collective investment schemes. And these are all service providers to retirement funds. Our members understand the administrative systems and other business processes that the TUPOC system will require. They interact regularly with retirement fund members and understand the difficulties that these individuals often face. I want to reiterate our members' support for the introduction of the TUPOC system. They believe that it will ultimately have a fundamental positive impact on the capital available to fund members on retirement. The system is to be introduced on the 1st of September through recent amendments made to the Income Tax Act by the 2023 Revenue Laws Amendment Bill, which has been approved by Parliament and sent to the President for assent. Before pension funds can implement the TUPOC system, however, amendments to the Pension Funds Act are required, and then can each fund amend its rules and have them registered with the FSCA. Time is very tight, and our members do not wish for unnecessary delays. We had various concerns with the provisions in the original 2023 bill, that these were substantially resolved during the processing of the bill in the National Assembly Standing Committee on Finance. National Treasury, in their draft response document presented to the National Assembly Committee on 19 March, set out their rationale for proposing certain changes to the initial draft, which changes were to be incorporated in the bill that is currently before this committee. Our members picked up some instances where these changes were omitted, no doubt an error, and some cross-referencing and numbering errors in the bill. On omissions, Treasury indicated that the drafting of the regional bill will be amended to ensure clearer understanding that Section 37D deductions to be made against the pension fund in respect of amounts due by members, for example, housing loans and divorce awards, must be made across all three components, savings, retirement, and vested. This clarification would be achieved by changing the terminology used in the bill to indicate that the deductions must be made against the member's individual account or minimum individual reserve, which terms incorporate all three components. This was done in most instances, but in some sections the change still needs to be done to ensure consistency across the board. Deductions for housing loans given by the employer or for guarantees in respect to the housing loans given by the employer have been omitted from the drafting of the new section 37D. We assume this is an omission, this omission is an error which needs to be corrected by the reinsertion of the relevant wording from the current pension fund tax. These and a few other errors and omissions have been pointed out in the documents submitted to this committee. There are a few typographical errors involving cross-referencing and numbering, which have been pointed out also in the document submitted to this committee. When the required amendments to the Pension Funds Act have been approved by Parliament and signed into law, pension funds must submit amendments to their fund rules to the FSCA so that fund members' expectations can be met come 1 September. The law requires that the FSCA can only proceed with that process when the amendments to the Pension Funds Act have been signed into law. We therefore hope that the corrections to the bill can be made through this committee and that the bill can then proceed to be signed and gazetted so that this essential work can commence. The two-pot system proposals introduce a fundamental change to the retirement system in South Africa. The CISA wishes to emphasize that our members are committed to meeting the 1 September implementation date and are working diligently towards achieving that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Now we move over to Treasury, your response, including the suggestions that there are typographical glitches in the law of words, which means we have to amend this bill, which means, presumably, Francis will go back to the NA press. But let's come to that when we do. So there are changes that are being proposed, cross-referencing and so on. Okay, over to Cedric.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning, honourable members. Albina, would you like to take us through the fund side?
Good morning, Chair, and honourable members and all participants. I'm trying to navigate my sharing here. Apologies for that. Can colleagues please confirm if the slides are in presentation mode?
Yeah, we see that. Thank you.
Chair, we have received submissions from CISA, EPF, Costachi, and one individual on the bill that the Select Committee has published for the public comments. So we're responding to those. The IRFA indicated that they are in support of the comments submitted by CISA. So maybe if I can just start with the comment that I ended with, which you have alluded to, Chair. We do accept the typos that have been identified, and we will consider those in the bill, in amending the bill. So the first comment deals with a request for consistency in using the word benefits and members share to replace those.
Okay. Albina, just one moment before I forget, I should have said this earlier. And this is, excuse me, there was a letter from the minister. It was sent out to members yesterday. We'll also take us through the meaning of that letter or amendments or any related matter. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you. When you come to it, don't forget. Let's look at the letter.
I'm just making a note. Andy is here with nobody that they will speak to that.
Okay.
All right. They want to speak to you anyway. Thank you. Thank you for that, Chair. Okay, so the first comment is a request that for consistency where we use the phrase benefits or members share, we should replace that with members' individual reserves or members' individual accounts. We are not in agreement with this comment because benefit as defined in the Act refers to an amount payable to a member or beneficiary. So we see a blanket replacement of these terms, benefit and members' share, as proposed. That it might not be appropriate, and we have in any case clarified in 37G that all deductions should be allocated from the member's individual reserve or member's individual account where applicable. The second comment is clarity on the omission of housing loans by employers in 37G. This was not a mistake. We will pick up this policy discussion at a later stage because Section 95 of the PFA, of the Pension Funds Act, only empowers funds, not employers, to grant loans or guarantees for the acquisition of immovable property. Therefore, in the absence of a provision that empowers employers to provide loans to members, we have removed reference to employer loans in 37D deductions. So as I mentioned, this is a discussion we will take on later because empowering employers to grant loans has implications of them having to comply with the NCA and be supervised by the NCR. The next comment is for Treasury and the Revenue Services to start engagement on matters related to accessing the retirement company in instances of retrenchment, dismissals, and resignation, including providing affordable home and educational loans to members from their pension funds. The proposal is for this matter to come into effect on March 2025. We do note this. We are willing to start discussions on potential options to allow members to access the retirement company in instances of severe financial distress. Please bear in mind that the retirement component is not accessible. It's subject to preservation, even when a member is retrenched, dismissed, or has resigned. However, as Kosati mentioned, retrenchments are not voluntary. That is the occurrence that happens to a member without their choosing. So we are willing to start those discussions once we have settled down the two-part system. Nonetheless, we do not see the discussions being concluded by March 2024 for implementation in conclusion in November. For implementation next year, March. This is because there is a legislative process that is usually followed when we make changes to the tax system, and these changes need to first be in Annex C of the budget. Once approved, then those changes are included in the tax laws for public consultation and then follow the legislative process. Okay, we also got comments that note concerns that the bill allows for access to pension benefits by multiple parties, and that this risks the safety of retirement savings to unscrupulous use. We do note this concern. However, retirement fund savings belong to members and their beneficiaries. It is therefore important to note that these savings are not held or managed by the government. They are managed by boards of trustees, which are independent, and government, therefore, is not in a position to access or utilize members' retirement savings. Also, these amendments that we are making do not permit access to pension funds by multiple parties, but by the member him or herself in case the person is mainly interested in the safety component. Clarity is sought on the taxation of pension fund payouts. I think the cry out here is that as workers we pay a tax while we are contributing and also while we are working. And when we exit the fund, we are required to pay tax again. We do note this concern. However, the system that we have is an EET, where the contributions into the pension fund are exempt. The growth in the pension fund is exempt. Tax is only payable when a member exits the fund. So it should also be noted that when a member exits the fund, especially at retirement, there are special rates that apply that would be beneficial to the member. A concern is raised that giving members access to their pension funds does not solve their financial problems, but adds towards poverty when they get to retirement. This is noted, however, Treasury has been inundated with several requests for any access to retirement benefits. This emanated from COVID, but we have actually been getting those requests even before COVID. Hence, the proposal to restructure the retirement savings to allow limited withdrawals, but also allowing most of the savings to be preserved in the retirement component. We should also note that the T-Pot system will not affect retirees. So those that are already receiving an annuity or pension will not be affected by the T-Pot system. Those that are still contributing is a plus because they'll preserve more of their retirement savings in the retirement component while having some limited access from the savings component in cases of financial emergency. The request was made that pension fund members should be allowed to make withdrawals to pensions at home, and this could eliminate 20 to 30 years of debt that most people tend to be faced with at retirement, where they have to use their pension payout either to settle their bonds or build themselves a home. This is not accepted. We do note that there are other pension funds that do not offer this facility, but the Pension Fund Act in Section 19 already allows for loans and guarantees to members for the acquisition of immovable property against their pension savings. We got a request for clarity and confirmation on the treatment of funds transfers post-implementation of the two-pot system. The question is whether such transfers should not be component-specific. We do agree this comment is not relevant for the Pension Funds Amendment Bill, but for the Revenue Laws Amendment Bill, we have clarified in there if further clarity is required, it's something that we will consider. So the Revenue Laws Amendment Bill does state that transfers should mirror where they have been transferred from. So if a member, upon resigning, decides to transfer to another fund, the savings component will go to the savings component, retirement to the retirement component, and vested to the vested component in the fund they are transferring into. Clarity was also requested on the treatment of the retirement component in cases of divorce proceedings. Confirmation whether the ex-spouse would be permitted, would be entitled to a lump sum from their ex-partner's retirement component, or if this benefit that comes from the retirement component should be transferred to the retirement component of the other spouse. This is noted. We have clarified that the Pension Fund Amendment Bill including all public sector laws. Red was the revenue laws amendment. Funds should allocate permissible deductions proportionally across all components. Further, we are not changing the status or the manner in which funds pay out divorce related benefits. So if the ex-spouse prefers to cash out, they should be able to do that, subject to tax, obviously. If they want to transfer to their fund, that is also allowed. So this is how the divorce related pension benefit pension interest is treated. That will be maintained going forward. It's up to the ex-spouse to request or to make an election in terms of how the deducted amount should be paid. Clarity is also requested on the treatment of retrenchment benefits. That is, if members would have access to all components as a cash benefit. This is a discussion, as mentioned, we will take up later to allow retrenchment benefits from the retirement component. Currently, retrenchment benefits will be allowed from the vested component in terms of the currency. The two-point system introduces preservation of the retirement component. So for now, the retirement component will not pay any retrenchment benefits. Meaning no withdrawals or cash payments can be made from the retirement component until we have that discussion of addressing retrenchment cases when a member is in dire financial distress. A request for clarity was also made on whether the retirement component that is preserved inside the fund. So if a member resigns from an employer that is participating in that fund and they do not transfer to another fund, whatever is left in that fund, we consider it as preserved inside the fund. Clarity is requested on whether whatever is preserved in that fund can be withdrawn from the age of 55, similar to how preservation funds operate, or if that will only become payable when a member retires. Again, the law does not permit the retirement component to be withdrawn before retirement, unless if there's a death or emigration, meaning that the retirement component is preserved until retirement. So that member that preserved in the fund will have to get that retirement component when that member retires or retires in terms of the fund rules and make an election who have that retirement component paid out. The concern was raised that the retirement component introduces complexities if a member that does not have dependents dies shortly after retirement. Our response is that the bill, the PFA bill, even the Revenue Laws Amendment Bill, they do not make changes to how funds handle death benefits. Concern is raised that the de minimis amount, which is currently $165,000, this is an amount applicable for purchasing an annuity, so any amount above, if a member retires and the retirement component has accumulated amounts that exceed 165, a member cannot cash out. The retirement component will have to be paid as an annuity. The concern is that this amount is too low. There's a request that it should be increased. We do note this concern. However, this amount has recently been increased. It's a general policy concern. It's not specific to the two-part system. we are willing to take up this discussion at an later stage. We also received a request for clarity on the treatment and allocation of the purchase of service periods in terms of the TPOS system for defined benefit funds. So defined benefit funds, they use a formula to define the benefit that pays out. And a member has the ability to purchase the service period, where in the case of a defined contribution, a member can just make additional voluntary contributions. So in the case of the defined benefit fund, our response is that where the service purchase is comparable to an additional contribution, or should be comparable to an additional contribution in a defined contribution, it should be allocated proportionally in the two components, savings and retirement components. So if a member that is in a defined contribution makes additional voluntary contributions, those contributions will be split in terms of the savings and the retirement component. Similarly, if a member of a defined benefit fund purchases additional service period, that service period should be split in terms of the savings and the retirement component. However, this additional contribution is subject to the allowable tax deduction rate. Currently, the deduction into funds has the rate of the less of 27.5% or 350,000. So a member can contribute up to those limits to get the tax deduction. The concern was raised on the practicality of the implementation date of September 2024. We do note the concern, however, the date is set for September 2024 and has been adopted by Parliament, with the amendment now and to be assented by the President. Thank you, Chair. I think that's the end of our responses.
Now, the letter from the Ministry is basically dealing obviously with all these amendments, but in the printing, mistakes made in the printing of the vote on the day it was voted on in the House, right? And it's under my correct. And then we also hope that with what Afisa has said.
Yes, correct.
Right, so we have to make those amendments. And you have a separate annex document, is that right?
Yes, so
yeah. Okay.
Would you like the legal colleagues to speak to that?
Well, not now, but when we process the vote, yeah. But if I understand you correctly, and the submissions made by the two stakeholders, there are no proposals for change of context.
No.
So it's only the technical amendments.
That's correct.
Right. Now, can I hand back to the stakeholders to come in and then we close open and the Republic hearing process to all the members? So, Kosatu first, and thereafter,
please. Okay. Do you have anything to say? Yeah. Sure, quick, Chair, thanks. Look, Chair, I mean, I think you're right. We have consensus with Treasury. I think we're still looking to see things get done. We don't have any substantial amendments. We've had a long discussion, a long journey, but I think we've agreed to the compromises. Just in terms of the technical drafting, cleaning up, wherever the typos, et cetera, you know, we'll support fixing those now if that's possible and that's necessary. And I think if one recalls correct about being too presumptuous, I think one recalls the input by the legal advisor, Clarence Jenkins, and I think also discussions with both committees that is possible during this remaining month and a bit. Of this parliament. So I think, yeah, Chair, in the national team, we were supporting the necessary technical amendments, and I think we're just keen to to conclusion, we think we can do so.
Yeah, I think it was policy amendment because we've looked at the other national council of provinces we let to go. So there's no debate about that. They will have to deal with its own issues. The only issue is whether this requires the NA Committee to formally meet and so on. But that's time for coming on. Aziza?
Thank you, Chair. We accept Treasury's responses and we'll be very happy if the technical amendments can be made and if it won't hold up the process to pass the bill as soon as possible. Thank you.
No, we can be late. NA is sitting for 2 hours, for 2 occasions at least, one in April and one in May. And, you know, we must just do what we have to do. It's not allowed to post stuff. Okay. Fine. Let's go to members now. Whose hands are up? Dennis, anybody else? No? Okay.
Thank you very much. Morning, Chair. Morning, ladies and gentlemen. Before I start, Chair, condolences on the loss of your comrade. And thank you for being with your reference for today's meeting. Thank you to, again, Father Matthew from Kasatu and to Ms. Messerschmidt for compelling inputs. And, I think the party's inputs are mostly, I think, you know, the stuff that we've come a long way discussing, and we're largely in agreement with the principles. There's a couple of important things that came out of a CISA, and so I'd like to maybe dwell a little bit on those. And first of all, I note that obviously from Kasatu's side, they're quite keen to get this thing to move forward because the members are hoping to get their hands on a little bit of money, additional money. Some need it, or some think they need it more than they do, but other people may well be in desperate need, and it's for that very reason that we've taken this route. Obviously, the complexity comes in with finding a balance between the dates. And, you know, I mean, it was raised in the documents that ASISA put forward and in Treasury's response about, you know, the implementation date. But Chair, I want to make quite a strong point here. I've noted that one of ASISA's members is Old Mutual. Now, the Old Mutual have been in the media vocally expressing themselves on this matter. And it's very disappointing to me that no one's taken time to bring their concerns to this committee and explain it in detail, noting that none of us are pension fund listed. We are politicians, we are jacks of all trade, master of none, and we have broad overview. So no one's taking the time to include the decision makers in the debate. It seems to be, you know, Old Mutual and a few other big players taking snapshots from the sidelines, but not actually engaging with Parliament. Now, the erosion of Parliament is on many people's lips. And the fact that, you know, Parliament is a shadow of what it used to be, et cetera, et cetera. But if you're not prepared to engage Parliament, then what do you expect is my response to that. So I've got to tell you, Chair, I'm a little bit grumpy at the fact that the level of inputs that we've had has been, you know, fine, but it's been quite on a fairly superficial level without going into depth. So, you know, to Mr. Williamson and his cohort, if you really want to, you know, make a lot of noise, come and make it where it's going to make a difference. Because, you know, talking to the media is not going to have an impact on the implementation date. Treasury was quite emphatic in their response. And I mean, what they're saying to you, and it's written in bureaucratic speech, it says, Parliament has decided this will be the implementation date. So what they're saying is, this is a political decision that's been taken. So if you want to influence that political decision, don't talk to Treasury. Come and talk to the politicians. That's what Treasury is telling me. This was your chance. And I did try and send a kind of a prompt to Old Mutual because they're the ones that have been most vocal in the media, but we haven't seen much about it. Again, people trying to access the administration through their back channeling that they've been so comfortable with over the years and not actually engaging Parliament where the decision was supposed to be made. I would love to find a compromise that's going to work, because the worst thing we need to do is to create a false impression for members of pension funds that they're going to have the ability to access things in September, and then it all falls on its nose when the date comes and we find ourselves in a position. So, Asisa, I don't believe that you've done justice to the argument explaining why the implementation date is so impractical, and I certainly think that your members could have gone much further in terms of sending some people here to explain what the real technical issues are. So that's the point. In your presentation today, though, you did mention that there are a lot of FSCA processes that need to take place, and each pension fund is going to need to get an approval from the FSCA. I'd just like to hear from you, Asisa, if you've had engagements with the FSCA, if they've been proactive, or what the situation is in terms of, guiding people through the processes and the timelines on that. Have they indicated that they will be able to process what promises to be part of alumnus pile of paperwork that they will need to go through? I'm sure a lot of it will be fairly standard, but knowing the industry as I do, each one will have their own set of legal guys drafting different wordings, etc., etc. So I do think it's going to be a bit of a process. Let us know if you have opinions on that. Let us know now, please. I'm a little bit worried about the omissions, numbering errors, and consistency issues. I note the minister's letter. Thank you. Obviously, these things should be avoided, especially when we're trying to process bills fairly quickly. Not hugely impressed by that. And the fact is, yes, it is going to have to go back to the NA at some stage. I then want to talk about the deductions for housing loans. This is quite an interesting thing, and I mean, the comment by Treasury is well accepted that the loans against funds by employers versus loans against the pension funds by the fund managers themselves, are two very different things, and I get that entirely. And the NCR implications were great. Now, Treasury, I don't think it's up to you to determine whether somebody, an entity, should be able to apply for an NCR license or not. I'm just wondering, is this a material change in how things have happened before? So have employers been allowed to do this before? And are we going to effectively be changing the conditions of employment for certain people by making this amendment in the law, or by having this raised in the law? And, I must talk for myself and say, many employers don't always have the interests of their employees at heart. So loans against pension funds should probably be avoided as far as possible. And if one sees what the property market, certainly in Gauteng, is doing these days, I think that, there's no such thing as a sure investment anymore. That's for certain. So that is my concern. But the concern is made worse by a comment a little bit later in Treasury's presentation when I said, not all pension funds offer such a facility. So it is going to, in my view, change the way that certain employment contracts are envisioned. People that may have had an incentive built into their contract before will no longer have that. Perhaps Matthew can guide us a little bit about that. And then just an observation in terms of that 165,000, and there were a few other specific amounts stated in the Act. If Treasury can just tell me, are these things that are included in the annual review of the Rates and Monetary Amounts Amendments Act? And if not, should they? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. Any other members want to add anything? Particularly, please.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning. Good morning to all the members and the stakeholders, the colleagues on the platform, and condolences. Chair, I think my concern is on what the Honourable Vida has raised, the issue of almost And I don't know if the Old Mutual is a member of ACCESA. And I thought this deal that was dealing with will help most of the people in our constituencies, but also ourselves. There are many concerns that has been raised, and we seem we have been blamed from our constituencies that we seem quiet, we are not doing anything, because they can't just say exist. They might have been legislated. So one needs an assistance and a guidance from ACCESA and other members who might have information in as far as how does this relate to ACCESA or any other, or is there any other organization that can assist. The other concern that I heard is that when one passes on soon after the patient has been put in the port of investment of the Old Mutual, the remainder, no matter how much it is, it is lost. Your beneficiaries cannot access that. And this is what exactly what has been experienced by the people who are complaining about it on the social media. And for one, I'm also affected. I don't know if this is correct and what is that I'm going to do about it. Why are people not allowed? If I want to take that money for myself, why can't I be allowed to do that? But it's a very serious problem that affects most of the people Czechoslovakians. I think we need to be assisted, you know, even in our community, even if we are not members of the of parliament anymore, seventh administration. We must be able to, you know, to give people guidance and which door to knock, what to happen. And lastly, Chair, I would like to know if these consultants that have been used for pension to assist or tax consultants who are assisting, you know, pension beneficiaries, are they members of ACCESA, or where do they fall in? Because I've got this view which is subject to question, and this is what also because of the members of the society has been rising and the my constituency, that it looks like these insurance companies that we put money on, they seem to have a relationship with these consultants, and these consultants are getting something out of it. Whereas you as a member, you don't benefit much, and they decide for them how much they will get on a monthly basis. So those are my concerns, Chairperson, just for the benefit of the constituency. Thank you.
Thank you, Nicoletti. I don't know much to say. Tracy was replied to and without CISA and because I'd like to say something. Is there like an implementation plan between say now or the 1st of May? To 1st of September, that consensually agreed between industry, national treasury, and other stakeholders, not least COSATU and other representatives of workers. Secondly, are there things that the stakeholders feel we should put in the report that like binds the process to some extent, although the report doesn't necessarily mean, obviously.
as a provision in a law. Thirdly, on the matter of typographical glitches, I know Treasury, you're under pressure, I know Parliament's under pressure, but this is happening increasingly over the last year, and it's just not acceptable. The primary responsibility of authorities is the executive, I think, but also Parliament's oversight staff are going to check these things. I'm not sure who's supposed to do what, but it is extremely worrying. And I don't think that we should let it pass, so we must effect the changes. Now, can you come in here, Frank? Frank, yeah. Right?
Yeah, President, I'm here.
Yeah, the question to you is these technical glitches and cross-references, do they have to go back to the NAS cross, or are because they just simply, like these sort of minor technical, you know, change of process, they don't have to go back? For the committee to consider and take back to the House.
Chair, my view is those typographical changes, and it's not just my view, that is the practice, it's typographical changes, the new combined words that we see in that text and the full stop and semicolon that's been omitted, even that one paragraph that needs to move to the left, those are typographical. We don't need to, we can effect those administratively. We don't need to put that on a proposed change. The others are more substantial. Those need to be a proposed change that will go back to the NA for receivers. So we can effect the other changes typographically, and if it will save time, then of course, I think National Treasury might advise, but those other substantive changes can then be done later, but if it can be done now, and the orders will meet, then it can be done now, but what can be done administratively, we can do it, Chair, we don't need...
All right.
In fact,
so committee can you get in?
Yeah.
All right. You see, if the process evolves in the way it seems to be doing, the process would have taken the course, I don't know if it's doable, that look, we're about to round out the policy, should there be any upset. So we're going to go through the bill closed up here. Then what I was going to propose, if the meeting agrees, is that on Thursday at 2 o'clock we meet and process the voting on the bill and the report. But, you know, I don't think we should leave anything so later. There's going to be a new committee on both sides, and we're waiting. But you know, and we know who's going to win, but that's not the issue. The members are different. The chairs might be different. The whips might be different. So, and on this side, the chair will definitely be different. So what I'm saying is, no, I don't think so. I think unless it's been so perfect, we just do it. The National Assembly is meeting soon. In Pulalepo, can you check out the date and let me know after this meeting what date they're sitting again? It will take one small sitting for them to sort these issues out. But it reflects badly on the SDLP committee, they will let it pass. Also, there's a clumsiness by both National Treasury and Parliament as a council, or the National Assembly as a council. So I don't think we should let it pass unless it's impossible and it's going to hold up the process. So, is there any disagreement with what I'm saying? Right. So, in other words, to summarize, unless it's going to hold back the process and nothing can be done by the 1st of September, we go ahead and make the changes, and the NA process must take its particular course. Okay, having said that, can we go on? Can I go? Okay, on the matter of, I think in our report yesterday on the team, we should put down that, reiterate our concern about the tax issues and the need for educational workers from all sides, not least the consultative and representative of workers. And if I see that as a role, I'm sure that. But I also think, if you listen to the lady in our thoughts, there's a lot of misunderstanding across the board. So there's a lot of publicity, Chris, and your team. you know, I don't know how you do it. These days it's all about social media efforts. So, but about this process, otherwise it's going to be very messy. But most of all, is there an evolving or already shaped, maybe there's asking too much, program, or is there going to be a program to ensure that the different elements are implemented sequentially and whatever, so that by the 1st of September, this thing goes into effect. Can I have responses, please, from Treasury and then the stakeholders?
Thank you, Jay. Maybe I'll start first and then Alvina can come in after me. Quite a few of the questions were directed at Matita. They also take those. On the monetary threshold for annuities, 165,000, we do look at that periodically. It's not changed every year. Quite a few of our rates and thresholds are adjusted every few years for inflation. So we said that we will have another look at that one. There is an interesting point about this annuity that Honorable Mishangu mentioned about if a person passes away, but then the beneficiaries don't receive anything. And it's the type of annuity that they have purchased. So if they purchase a life annuity, that means it's trimming the risk of when someone passes away. So it will pay you until you pass away. So if someone lives a very long time, they'll get a lot of payments, but if someone doesn't live as long, they won't get as many pools at risk. But then unfortunately, the beneficiaries, after a number of years, don't get anything, any of the remaining amount. Because there isn't a remaining amount, the insurer will just continue to pay you until you pass away. There is another type of product called a living annuity, and that one is different. So that one, there is an amount, and individuals can take 2.5% to 17.5% out every year. And anything that is remaining when they pass away is passed on to their beneficiaries. So we have written some previous discussion papers on that. But I think it is part of this education campaign that we do also need to look at those issues and look at products, because if it does create a lot of anger, we need to see what we can do to either educate members so that they purchase the correct types of annuities, or they understand the implications of the different products that they purchase. Is there an implementation plan? We have met with FSCA previously. I think Zareen is here, so she can also talk to this about whether they would be ready. We have met with SAR. SAR have been working, and they are working on particular processes to do with industry, so that as soon as the implementation date comes around, they are all ready to process those applications as soon as they happen. So there has been a process. Each organization is working towards getting this implementation date ready. At NT, we provide some oversight, so we've spoken to some of the different administrators to make sure that they will be ready, and they have said that they will. Maybe we can go back and check with them all again after this, which is what we will do. We will also, we are trying to work on a communication plan within Treasury and the communications unit within Treasury, so that we can get more social media out there. We will have more media workshops on this policy, so that everybody can be as informed as possible. And we will follow up with them again as well. Now, Andy, I don't know if you would like to come in on the legislative changes and administrative changes on the bill. And Alvina, if there's something I've missed, you can come in as well. Thank you, Jim.
Good morning, Chairperson and committee members and stakeholders. I don't think at this point, I think Frank's explained. The point is the amendments that are not, strictly speaking, typographical or not typographical, needs to be passed, and I support that these should be done now, not be delayed, because some of them are quite critical for the implementation, the correct implementation of the different provisions. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Chris. And Chair, I'll come in with a question raised on employer loans. So currently the the Pension Funds Act does not empower employers to provide loans and seed or hypothecate or pledge those against the members' pension benefits. The Act only allows loans or guarantees to members against their pension benefit for housing loans or movable property. So we would not allow a deduction from the members' pension benefit for a loan that is provided by the employer. Meanwhile, the Act does not allow such loans to be offered to the member against that member's pension benefit. So I think we are not trying to meddle with the condition of employment, conditions of employment. If there is that arrangement between the employer and the employees, that can go ahead. But such arrangement should not be brought into the Pension Funds Act if the Pension Funds Act does not empower or allow such provisions. So Chris, you have covered the implementation. We do have regular meetings with Revenue Services and the FSCA to map out the implementation plan or any issues that need to be addressed towards implementing the two-part system. We've mentioned the information sessions we will have starting with government employees. We also have a media workshop with the media to ensure that they disseminate the correct information. FSCA is also planning information sessions with funds. Thanks. So that's all. Thank you.
Sorry, that thing's not easily. Members, do you want to come back? Before, I've got to say this. The other thing is, you might want to put in, we say what we said about big business lobbying away in the media. And it's not just here in this whole policy. Now, we can't entirely blame anything. There are sections of civil society who feel the same way about us. Because we have seen enough. Away and not fulfilling our constitutional obligations and so on. So we can't just blame outside stakeholders. I don't want to enter into exchange with you, Dennis, but you know, it's election time and I can't. You see, big capital is your constituency and you primed them to come here, but I think you might have said, well, you didn't, you could. Meant that, I don't know. And they don't come. Because, you know, the power doesn't reside with the DA. It resides with the ANC. So, you know, it's a very sad reflection on you in person and your party. And even your own constituency doesn't turn out here. Yet our constituency, so to speak, because I do. Not that it's unattended to the ANC. They're always here. Because they don't wear power ahead. So Janet, we will assist you to get your constituency to come to Parliament, okay? By putting it
Based on recent history, I think even the Zondo Commission indicates that it's far more in your party's constituency, that big business.
It's, excuse me.
I'm saying this entity specifically, but generally as a rule.
We're out of order, Frank. Can I expel this fellow from the meeting? Frank, don't answer. I don't answer. I can't expel it. By the way, I did actually ask one of your colleagues to leave. I've never done that in my life. And Frank said, yes, you can. And I think he walked out in the afternoon meeting. And I have no regrets about that. But anyway, and I think we know what I'm talking about, Dennis. Right. So let's come back to the point, which is that it is correct, really. I think so we should just reiterate that. But we're not going to react to the previous report. I'm just saying those elements should go in. And we should say that we are quite concerned. I would like to go home. Not a reflection on UMP or Frank or anybody. You're an excellent individual. You're under huge pressure. But voice about the institution, and it's very worrying. But it also reinforces when we rush to do both. Although the truth is, I've seen that even those that are not rushed are experiencing this more and more. But I heard up in the first 10 years of Parliament, it started happening, I think, after the first 10 years, I think. But anyway, right. So who wants to come in now?
Can I come on?
Yeah, who would this be? Ah, yes, Atisa, yes, please do.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
She has to go to her other meeting in the legislature. You want to say something? Oh, it's still you. Okay, go ahead.
No, I wanted to...
Yeah,
okay, Chair, I wanted to request Atisa and others to talk to what I have raised. Thank you.
Yeah, but she's about to do that, I think. Go ahead.
Thank you. Old Mutual is a member of a CPS, so we being here represents Old Mutual, insurers, collective investment schemes, etc., as I pointed out at the beginning of my presentation. Without the context within which Old Mutual expressed their comments, where the press was present, I want to say there's a general anxiety among our members to implement a fundamental change to the retirement fund system in South Africa within a very short space of time, and the anxiety is that we don't have final legislation to do that. Every business in its own context has different clients, different business models, have implementation plans, and they are working on the faith that the legislation will be passed as soon as possible so that they can make these changes to their systems legally. At this stage, there's no final legislation on which they are working. Our members are working on the legislation as it is known now. They can't afford to wait for it to be final. So there is a general concern about the timing, and I suspect that's where the comments probably came from. But I know for a fact Old Mutual is working very hard at implementation, as is all our other members. In terms of the communication, our members have already started the communication campaigns to the fund members to explain to them what the system is about, what will happen, how it will work. They have also trained their financial advisors in dealing with clients that are fund members or members of retirement annuities so that they understand the implications of the system on the products that they are invested in. We have engaged with the FSCA in terms of their readiness to process the rule amendments as soon as the Pension Funds Act is changed. They have assured us that they will increase their resources to be able to process fund rule amendments before the implementation date. We've also engaged with SARS around the practicality where tax directives will be required. They've already issued their technical documents, which we have commented on and engaged with them so that our systems can integrate, so that that process can run smoothly. On the administrative complexity, there was never a discussion or there wasn't an opportunity, I think, in this specific committee to highlight the administrative complexities with implementing the system in sufficient detail. We made extensive submissions to the Standing Committee on Finance before the implementation date was changed, and I mean, we accepted that we can work towards 1 September. But just a brief overview, the implementation date is the 1st of September, that happens, that's a Sunday, which means that the calculations, the whole of the system needs to be changed so that there can be a creation of the pots, and there are actually 4 pots, not only 2. So that's the pre-March 2021 Provident Fund annuitization. then everything up to 1 September, and then after September, the 2 new pots. So that is a substantial administrative system change. So on the 31st of August, which is a Saturday, there has to be calculations in terms of the seeding capital and the split between the savings component and the retirement component going forward, and how those calculations will be made on an ongoing basis. Then providing access to that savings component, there are administrative processes, the completion of forms, approvals, lots of checks and balances to make sure that there isn't fraud perpetrated through the process. And then those systems have to be switched on the 1st of September, everything carried over. And before that date even, members need to know what will be available to them. So there will be a run-up to that period in terms of which members will be informed how much will be available for withdrawal, probably 2 September, but not 1 September, that's a Sunday. And then all of the communications to clients that have been developed, specific rule amendments that have to be prepared, that has to go to the FSCA. So you will the systems preparations to integrate with SARS. So you'll understand there's quite a lot of administrative processes that need to happen. The complexity around that with the fundamental change is very much business dependent, but it is extremely complex. And our members, I can't emphasize enough that our members are committed to meeting that date and doing everything in their power to make sure that their systems and processes will be ready to do that come the 1st of September. But again, the anxiety is that they're doing all of this based on draft legislation. So the anxiety comes from we need the final legislation, we need the rule amendments, we need the SARS integration, and the 1st of September is 4 months away, approximately. I hope that I've answered all of the questions. If not, I'll be happy to listen to further ones.
Kaleli, you're okay. Kaleli? She's here. I think she left. Okay. Are there any other comments, questions, contributions? Any other hands up? Matthew? Father Matthew and Dennis called you.
I'll be happy with promotion. My father had wanted to be a Jesuit priest. Fortunately, he didn't go that route completely. He'd be dropped out. But so I always have a sympathy for Jesuits. Richard, I think Snowball Ryder's question of, employer loans against pension funds, I think we'd be wary of going down that route. But obviously, I think also Venus says the Treasury, the law doesn't provide for that currently, as my understanding. It provides for home loans. We'd be keen on that discussion about education loans, because again, home loans like education loans, those are good forms of debt, their investments, etc. But I think we'd be wary about opening its full force to all loans. We'd be much more key, obviously, for employers to pay workers better, but that's just a side rhetoric. I think first on the 1st of September implementation program, I think in principle there's been good discussion, I think between ourselves. I think some colleagues from business too at Dedlec, but I think meeting this after Dedlec as well, looking at that specifically. We've had good discussions, informal still, more informal, but initial rather, with colleagues from Treasury, with colleagues from FSCA, some of them are here online. But I think, we need to tighten up a little bit, because, it might seem like a lot of time, but it's not a huge amount of time. There's a huge amount of work, given that we have about 1,600 or so pension funds, et cetera, and given that many workers are very keen and so forth. Collectively, I think we need to have one message as Treasury, as the pension funds, FSCA, SARS, Labour, et cetera, we all have to do our work. We've already begun our work on that front today. In fact, after this meeting, we'll be going to a shop steward council as well on the Western Cape just to brief workers. We've been doing quite a bit of work with briefing workers. I think we've spammed on working with fishermen and integrities. We are also planning to ensure that as soon as possible to conclude this release, we have that kind of legal certainty under the belt to go full force, as you were mentioning, around social media. So to do videos and audios, including leaders of different views, etc. We're also covering all 11 official languages and doing electronic pamphlets too, because it really is a topical issue. We want to kind of help assist and so forth. But then, Chair, just in terms of the committee report, all that we could suggest would be, I think as you're correctly highlighting, you know, the need for a concrete implementation program. You know, perhaps even, you know, for the sixth parliament to kind of get updates, well, not the sixth parliament, the seventh parliament, getting updates with regards, you know, from stakeholders around the implementation program. You know, because it's not fair that if we, you know, harass parliament to do a bit and they're doing a bit, then we also have a responsibility as well, given the space for mischief and chaos is significant. And I think the other thing I could also recommend, Chair, that on the issue of retrenchment, that maybe perhaps also that we report to the seventh parliament on that issue too. We're not seeking to drag it on too long, because it is a significant gap which you can manage for a year or so, but we do not want to see it being dragged out of perpetuity. But again, there is kind of consensus on it happening. I think it's just a question of getting the wording and modality sorted out as quickly as possible. I mean, I think, yeah, so I think that's it in a nutshell. So, also your other comment. We have received quite a few reports in some workers who say, look, we're not going to cash out on the 1st of September, but they appreciate having the choice, having the option. And also the law was going to provide quite a few choices to workers if they never want to cash out on the 1st of September, or even in 2025, you can allow your savings pot to grow, to accumulate, etc. But when they like the choice that if there is a need, that they said, maybe yes, indeed that option, the choice is there for workers. Yeah, I think so really our focus now is on implementation on education as well, because there's a lot of confusion, misperceptions, etc., which we need also to contribute for Santa to addressing. I think lastly, Chair, to the issue of white monopoly capital and our DA members, we have tried to assist. So we fortunately have members of SARS, which is the largest banking tribunal in the country, and they also very much seem to help ignite the pension fund. But I thought I might have noted, Chair. And let me stop there and just thank members for their support on this journey. Thanks, Jim.
Thanks, Matthew. Okay, so a few things that you put into the report, our exchanges, at least in my view, let's see what the majority of people in the report comes to us. I think we've asked both of you, Lisa and yourself, to send us, if you want to. But let's make it 2 o'clock tomorrow, a paragraph or so, or half a quarter page or so at most, of what you think should be, you know, an aspect of the implementation program that might, if you like, guide the incoming committee and the NCO, besides not making too much of this, to see whether this has been done. Yes, Matthew, you said, but I want to say for that. For the moment, beginning said that what we should do is maybe also suggest the incoming committee, within 1 month of being constituted, that invite Treasury and you know, if need be, other stakeholders at their call, to actually report on progress and to do it regularly until the implementation comes into effect. There is a letter, angry letter, well, not angry, but understandably frustrating. Letter from the Snyders. We've covered that as well. Alvina did write. But that perception, as much as it comes from the individual writer, she doesn't have to appear before the hearing, is more pervasive than we think. The others who feel that way. And I've been raising it from the chair, so I'm sure it's just the same sort of letter or message. I get it also from by other people who get it from these people or draw my attention to it. But Ms. Knight has been responding to in the first standing, but also the insecurities on the other hand, I think we should understand. Having said that, I can't think of what else to say for now. What we need to do is ensure that between Frank and MP, the lawyers, they sort out what is going as a full amendment and
what can be done through a technical check. And then we need a report and a bill, at least a report that we think we will keep for reference to be to send back to the SCOF. Right. Having said that, is there anything else people want to say about process? Oh, yes. First thing, we did agree. We'll try to avoid meeting. We never said we'll never meet. But this is a very short meeting that I anticipated, 30 minutes or so. The report should go out by 5 o'clock tomorrow, Wednesday. So on Thursday, we could meet and vote on the bill and the report in 30 minutes. It's a Zoom meeting. There's no flight involved. So we go ahead and have it from 14.00 to 14.30, if that's okay with everybody. But you need a quorum. Then there's not much to do except to go through it line by line. So that's what we're going to do now. Now, what I suggest, although I don't know what's the best way, National Treasury, is that instead of taking us to Annex A separately, we know what's the file. Why don't we, when you're processing the bill, you then draw attention to any clause in Annex A that you might respect by way of amendments to typographical or other reasons, right? Is that okay, or do you want to do Annex A separately, or how do you want to do it? National Treasury, I'll leave it to you. I don't have any particular view. In the meanwhile, can you slide, the bill on the screen in Codeleco? Right. What do you want to do in National Treasury?
Sorry, Chairperson, yes, we can share this because we've already prepared the bill with the amendments and then point to
Okay. You got that. Yeah, fine. Let's do it like that. Okay. So now I got two sets of bill, right? So I think I'll use the latter one, right? So that will have everything. Right.
Yes, Chair. I'm going to also my colleague Melissa will see to point us to...
It'll be on the screen, but, you know, I'm old-fashioned, so I have to see this on my screen of this computer. And I hope I've got the right one. Right, okay. Let's go for it. Put it on the screen, please. Okay.
Good morning, Chair. I have got a slight head to you.
Yeah, I see that. Yeah. Okay, go ahead. I'll find the ball,
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to all the members and colleagues on the platform. As indicated, we have already made the changes in the bill, but there are the proposed amendments that are also in the pension fund amendment. But I think we just wanted to point out that in terms of the definition, there is a new addition that is substantial, which is the insertion of the definition of beneficiary funds. And this definition is being included on request by the industry to amplify the provision of the maintenance deduction for when a fund receives a maintenance order. And therefore, we were therefore then asked to substitute the definition of pension fund organization, which we did by including a new paragraph C, which will allow the pension fund organizations to receive and process payments in respect of maintenance orders and pay to the relevant beneficiaries. That addition of the new paragraph D in the definition of pension fund organization necessitated, therefore, a reference to the new D in the definition of beneficiary fund. So I think that is one. And that when I come to clause 37, cap deduction, I will also touch on this. And I think then we then have, in general, section, clause 1, which deals with all the amendments in respect of definition to assist with the interpretation of the bill. But the most
sorry. You see, you're not going to be able to help us if you have the same screen and you moved on to something else. Members have to see it, okay? And it's become quite complicated because now we have two versions of the phone. And nobody explained to us, well, we weren't clear about how we go through the process. So can we do it properly, please? Which means that we have to go through it as if the bill that we currently have before us includes your amendment, right? The latest one, the glitches and the additions that flow from the minister's letter and also just said, right? But in processing the bill, you just take us through the bill as it is and then say, now we introduce this new definition based on what the industry said, okay? Which is a substantial change, right? So can we start off with going to the first definition that sees and going down? You understand what I'm saying? Yeah, otherwise you have to say, members, do you have any other idea on what the simpler process of going through the bill clause by clause, anybody? Nope, so we'll settle for that. Let's look at it as it's a bill. Then you'll tell us this is what we brought in since the cross process, right? So let's start with that, right? Right, okay. So obviously, right.
The first one then would be the definition of beneficial fund, which was not in the fourth version.
That's right, right.
We should have included.
Yeah, you explained that. Yes.
And then we have a definition of divorce act, which is necessary to the extent that we are...
Yeah, we understand that. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
And
yeah, let's guide you because some of these things are straightforward, right? There's no need to worry about that. I will intervene. I'm not being rude. It's just to process the matter in a way that doesn't become, let's say, like banal, meaning that we understand what you're trying to say. Right. You go on to D, sub D there.
So then we have the definition of the various components, and these definitions are already contained
in the next.
And then we have this definition of pension fund organizations where we have already inserted the new paragraph D.
That's right.
And then we have the definition of pension interest, which has been brought to the pension fund amendment. Bill, we are aware that this definition exists in the Divorce Act. However, for three particular reasons, we are bringing this definition here. So to include a division of assets of marriages according to the tenets of religion, but also to ensure that the clean break principle applies on the date of court order for the divorce or the division of assets, and lastly to ensure that the payment of divorce orders is across all three companies.
So this will override what's existing in the divorce act, am I correct?
Yes, Chair. And we will see we have the new clause down there that deals with that, overriding the divorce act.
Good.
Then we have also the same definition in respect of the components contained in the article.
Right.
Okay. And then we then have an amendment of section 2 in the Pension Plan Act, which provides for in an event of a conflict.
Yeah, that's fine. Let's
run. Yes, and then we have an amendment of section 13B because 3, which deals with the substitution of the definition of OC, as well as the insertion of the new sub-paragraph to align the formulas that are used in the calculation of benefits.
Sorry. That jump was too far. Can you go back to that paragraph?
Yeah, go back further. Remember, we've got plenty of time between now and Thursday also. So we're not rushing anything, we're not voting today. I'm just saying to you formally. Go ahead, Dennis, what's your question?
No, it was just a little bit quick for me. Go back to this and then and obviously now you can carry on. Thank you.
So we have three which deals with the substitution of the to substitute the definition of OC and also to include a new paragraph to deal with the requirements of the two pots when calculating the benefits. Which then takes us to the next clause, which is clause 4, which is the amendment of section 19 of the Pension Plan Act, which substitution was to substitute the cap amount 78,000, which used to be 90, until 100%, which is an amount the fund can provide as a loan or a guarantee. That amount is now reduced to 5%. This is in line with the amendment that we made in January 2023 in the regulation 28, which reduced this amount. So we took the opportunity then to also reflect that reduction, the percentage of 5% in this year. Which then takes us to clause 5, which is the amendment to section 37 cap A of the Pension Fund Act. And this is a technical amendment which has been requested by staff to include reference to the Tax Administration Act so to enable staff to process the ICA deduction. And then Chair, this then takes us to clause 6, which is the amendment in 37 cap D of the Pension Plans Act, which deals with the deductions that are permitted. And the substitution in particular therefore introduces the deduction that may be allowed in respect of the savings withdrawal. And I think if I then come to this section, I would then would like to advise the committee of the other substantial amendment, which is also linked to the referencing of the new paragraph D of the definition of pension fund interest of the pension fund organization, where we needed to close the gap and ensure that we then provide that a fund may make the payment, may pay the maintenance to the fund. And the phrases in paragraph D of the definition of pension fund organization in section 1. So this is a substantial amendment that links to that. And therefore, in this clause, we have outlined all the deductions that are permitted. And that then takes us to the next clause. And from here, of the amendments to the various public sector pension fund legislation. And the first one is the Post and Telecommunications Related Medical Act that is being amended. And in the clause 7, we provide for the definition in the Post and Telecommunications Related Act, which are similar to the definitions that are contained in the Pension Fund Act and may include the one decision.
Just after the pause here, right? Can I just ask you to pause and for them to realize what's going on?
Yeah.
The magnitude, the gravity, the scope of the amendment you're effecting, covering several other things as well, and in this bill as a whole, borders of stupendous, okay? I don't know how a committee, even at the best of time, even if it was just some starting of a 5-year span of parliament, would be able to itself as a committee, right, and others, carry out oversight. And
expect the staff to go through this and check that every clause here, every clause reference is taken is correct. So as a chairperson, you feel almost helpless, actually. And I'm just saying that this is, I don't know how Parliament expects us to process these things at the best of times. So, but when we are under the pressures we are. But I'm just alerting the committee to this. I'm not sure what happened. I'm not sure who's coming back and so on. But these are matters that need to be addressed. We are processing this clause without knowing fully that all that should be covered and even the consequences seem to be correct. Can I ask Tracy a question? When you presumably made these changes, right, you checked with the relevant department who is much more familiar with some of these bills that some of these laws were amended to process to. They had a say in this and they checked that everything is put here, cross-referencing and so on, is correct. Like here we're dealing with a in-house matter, tax issues, so which falls under Kristen herself. But if you go further down, there are issues here that go beyond the purview of the those that fall within, obviously, Treasury, Timor's Act, and so on. So I just want to ask you a question about process. You consult with the official from the relevant department, and you check that the cross-referencing is correct, and that all the issues that you need to amend in their bills is covered in your bill here. Hello?
Thanks, sir. Yes, we have undertaken an engagement process with all the relevant departments, which in respect of the Telecommunications Related Amendment Act is the Department of Communications and also...
And you know that, but you're saying you did it, but you need to know. But,
yes,
but Parliament needs to ask itself. It's a question I'm putting to Parliament, right? Asking you, did you do it? Yes, you're saying you did it. Your argument, already we've just seen the glitches, right, in the current version of the bill that's before us, based on what happened at stop. So, in short, I'm alerting the committee to the difficulties we have as a committee. I'm not sure what you do about this, but hey, that's the next generation of MPs to attend to. Go ahead, Pete.
Thanks, Jay. And
before we do, can I just raise something before it runs away from me? Sure. So just a question, please, if I may. I don't see an amendment to the definition of the term the authority. Now, I'm assuming that with the FSCA coming in, there was an amendment somewhere before. I just want to make sure that we're referencing the authority in the amendments to Section 4. I don't see a new definition for that. Is there an existing definition that we are happy with? Because I can't find it in the original bill, noting that the amendments pulled two screens, the amendments that affect this. So is it a good time to put in a definition of the authority, or is there one already in one of the previous amendments?
Thanks, Dennis. What does that mean?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, we have made a substitution in the Pension Funds Amendment Act, and I have flagged it in front of you under Section 19, where changes have been made to refer to the authority, which is the FSCA, and we therefore have removed the reference to the registrar. So, and everywhere where we are talking about authority, that change has been made in the act.
Thank you. Right, go ahead, please. Can I just also suggest that when we write our report, we stick with our district. While understanding the urgency of this matter, and we support the need for a two-part system, we express our considerable concern at the processing of this bill. Given the gravity and scope of the bill. Right, fine, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. And as I have indicated, then in the Postal Telecommunications Regulatory Act, we are amending the Section 1 of the definition so to include all the decisions that relate to the components as well as to the pension interest definition. In clause 8, we are inserting in the Post and Telecommunications Act an application clause so to provide for the conflict between the provisions of this Act and the Demote Act, as we have similarly in the Pension Fund Act. And then in this Act again, in clause 9, we have substituted the clause dealing with withdrawals and deductions from members' pension benefits. This clause would be a clause that would provide for the deductions that are permitted by the fund, which includes but not limited to orders against the fund in respect of maintenance, divorce, and other debts that the fund may provide to, or rather loans they provide to the members of the respective fund. And we also therefore had to make the substitution so to include reference to penalty withdrawal in terms of the savings benefits that is being introduced by the two-court system. If I proceed, Chair, we also have substituted Section 10F of the Post and Telecommunications Related Matters Act, which specifically deals with divorce matters, where we are making sure that the processing of divorce order payments now is across all components, that also when a member is requesting for a withdrawal of the savings benefit, that the orders in respect of the divorce be protected to an extent that these withdrawals are not, the withdrawal is not made and it results in insufficient funds to meet the commitments or rather the financial obligations as a result of the divorce. But also to make sure that the spouse or non-member spouse is informed where the party would like to make the withdrawal, or they can inform the party. Now, this then takes us to clause 11, which deals with the amendment of the Transmit Pension Fund Act. Similarly, Section 1 of the Transmit Pension Fund Act it has been amended to include the various definitions to align with the two-part system and the introduction of the various components, as well as the definition of pension interest. There were also some of the definitions that were substituted at the request of the funds and the transfer, which are not that substantial, they are just consequential, as you would see maybe as an example in paragraph J. We therefore also in this act are including an application clause, which is would be a new one head A to provide for in the event of the conflict, where which act in the divorce act and this act will apply, and it will be the Transnet Pension Fund Act. We also, and I think they also took the opportunity to reference the Financial Sector Commercial Authority, as it is. And then in Section 7, again, it's a clause 14 that deals with withdrawals and deductions. It takes a similar format as the Post and Telecommunications, where we have made the substitution so to provide for what would for the withdrawal saving withdrawal benefits in particular, and make that alignment. And other deductions as which are permitted. So that would be similar to what is contained in 37FD of the pension fund. And that takes us to a new clause, which is clause 15. This clause is being inserted because the pension, the Transfer Pension Fund Act was not provided for this payment on pension or dissolution of marriages. So we took the opportunity then to substantially provide for the payment of pension interest on divorce. So to also make sure that all the pension funds, if I may use that word, act, have similar provisions, and therefore that would lead to similar or equal, you know, treatment and application of the law. And then
This provision would have been necessary anyway, even if it weren't for this bill. Would that be correct?
Yes. And therefore, they did
but
have.
But the broader issue is not really our concern right now. That these acts are outdated, right? In some senses, irrelevant to what we're doing right now. And I don't know, Professor, whether you shouldn't be raising these issues in another forum. But that's for you to think about, and that falls under other portfolio committees and select committees. But okay, let me stop here. Go ahead, please.
Thanks, Chair, which takes us to clause 16, which is an amendment of section 9 of the Transnet Pension Fund Act, which deals with the coverage of debt owing to by the fund. And we also have therefore substituted this section so to ensure that it is aligned with other pension fund acts, and it takes a similar approach to the 7KFD of the Pension Funds Act. Again, we Transnet also wanted to take the opportunity to insert a new clause which they did not have on housing loans, since where the financial support is from the designated fund. This is provided for in the other funds, but they did not have it, and they have taken the opportunity to include this. And which takes us to clause 18, which deals with recovery of any other amount that may be due. So there is a kind of a change of format. If you look here at the Transnet Pension Funds Act, and maybe you look at post and telecommunications, so you will find their act would have had different sections dealing individually with some of these deductions. So we did not change that format, but we made the substitution so that we can get the alignment. But and therefore they also took the opportunity to insert this this section, so to deal with matters that they were not providing for. For an example, in respect of subscriptions to medical aid and insurance, and where such would be paid by the fund. Then that takes us to clause 19, which is the amendment of section 30. This is just a consequential amendment to the effect that we are now introducing the new sections that are being inserted, and therefore it was therefore required that in this clause we do refer to those sections. Also, to provide for a due provision that the fund is defined in part of this fund, Transnet Pension Fund, or rather the funds under this act, a paragraph A span, which makes it easy for the application of the Income Tax Act to this fund. And then that then takes us to clause 1, which introduces the amendment to the government employees pension law. And by the definition of section 1 of the GEP law, and including the definitions that are similar to the ones in the Pension Funds Act or Amendment Bill, and they are to make sure that we introduce the components and also to introduce the definition of pension interest. We also had to insert a new clause, section 1, cap A, to provide for the, in the event of the conflict in respect of the divorce matters in the Divorce Act and Spin Act. Now again, the pension law also provides for withdrawals and deductions from members' pension benefits. Again, we have substituted this section so to align with the other pension fund, and we also introduced the withdrawal benefit that is coming with the two-pot system. And then which also takes us to the substitution of section 24 A in clause 24, which also deals exclusively with the matter in respect of the payment of pension interest. And the substitution was to align the section so to take into account the requirements when the members are making the withdrawal in terms of the savings and so on. That would then represent the end of the clauses. The last clause will be the end of the clause that deals with short titles and commencement. Thank you, Trent.
Yeah. Okay, thanks, Avalina. All I can say is you and your team have done a phenomenal amount of work. And no one is going to attack you. We don't go through the memorandum that we need now. No one's going to attack you on glitches here. It's just the magnitude of what you've done. Revenue rolls, amendment bills in like, you know, relatively minor. So we must thank you, because you've been a lot of political pressure to get this done. So can we, I'm sure the whole committee agrees with me, express our gratitude to you, Helen, and I have to deal with that in the new term of Parliament. Now I see there's something on the chat group. I think this is MP replying to Dennis Ryder. Okay, that's covered. Thank you. That was okay, thank you, MP. Okay. Okay, that's it. Members, is there anything else you want to raise? No. So in that case we meet at 2 o'clock. I don't think it'll be more than half an hour. And can we ask the drafters to give it a few days or so after? We're very unhappy with this process, but we recognize the need for it, and we feel that the Treasury Parliament should avoid subjecting committees to this process. But, you know, we must express our concern about implementation and equal implementation program. Relatively content to agree that we definitely got to and that sort of thing, that we should add something about asking the new incoming committee within 3 weeks, let's say within 3 weeks of the constitutional for to meet at least Treasury, and if they so choose stakeholders, to say where's the process. Is there anything else people to add to the report? They must send it to Inco-Eleco and myself. Anything else, colleagues? No? So I want to take some time thanking all of you, not least the stakeholders who have appeared from civil society and Treasury, and the colleagues from the committee and comments. Usually, this meeting was supposed to start at 10:01, and because of practical issues, I'm speaking in that funeral, I have to be there in you know, we brought it forward. But once again, thanks to everybody. I appreciate the cooperation from committee members as usual. Thank you. We shall see you tomorrow at 10 o'clock. The meeting is going back to 10 simply because there's no bus issue anymore, since the meetings are all Zoom this week, and in fact, they are on 10. And wherever we will be through the program, but it changes, we are under control, very frustrating in Kodako and me. But if there are no plenary, then we will use the afternoon to process the public procurement call. Thank you. And the report was sent to you yesterday. Please look at it beforehand. Thank you.
Okay.
Yes, yes, sir.
So I mean, lastly, when we look at the dates, can you please just keep in mind the GLAS meetings that's also taking place? And just keep that in mind, not to have a double booking set.
Yeah. What are you referring to exactly? I'm a bit confused. GLAS?
What's the that? Intelligence law meetings that's also taking place, Chair.
Oh, yeah.
Just keep that in mind, please.
You know what? Usually, you know, we can't do that. It means taking part of committees, et cetera, by other committees. They don't normally do that. But bearing in mind where we are in the parliamentary process, in Kululeko, will you confirm with the secretary? Because Dennis will say, especially smaller parties, I understand, Dennis will say, well, take into account these. So you meet in the afternoon, Tommy?
Yeah, those meetings are up and down. It's the ad hoc committee, so we're pressing to get it through. Just to take note of this. I will
But I'm saying that where there are no penalties, I'm not sure how many committees are going to be meeting. So we're using that slot. But we're not going to impose on you. So in Kululeko, but you could also do it pending Kululeko, your program for the next period until Parliament rises. Okay? So we'll accommodate you. Thank you very much. And it's easy because it's Zoom, and so we can juggle things around. Thanks. But I must say, I spoke to Treasury twice. And they have, in fact, sat for 2 days, if I'm correct, 8 and 9, with all the stakeholders of the public procurement office. So we've had an exhaustive exchange with them. They'll be here tomorrow, and so the left will ensure that they all invite, I'm sure, even those who made permission to the public hearings on the NCOP side, who did not attend the 8th and 9th, they're welcome to come tomorrow. And then at the end of that process tomorrow, we cut off and start looking at the policy issues and then close by clause. Thank you very much, everybody.